All right, here we go on a Friday. A little AC/DC action here. This is not the Herd. This is Baldwin in the Berg.
We wish it was the Herd.
We wish it was the Herd. A little bit of a same introduction as the Herd.
Get a call in from Colin Cowherd.
Colin Cowherd, shout out on this early morning. I am Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Golvash.
And here we are, guys. Show number 9.
We're back in black.
We begin November.
We're about to hit 10 shows already. Does that feel weird?
We're approaching the milestone of 10 shows, which will be next week.
Can we get a plaque or something to celebrate? Anything? What's going to be here?
You can get a cookie, Golvash, because you show up.
You
show up 5 minutes before the show
You know
starts.
What? I'm going to eat Austin Smiley Cookie.
How about you use your meal plan where you have $1,000 in the green on?
All right, that was a low blow. All right, let's get on with the show. I can't take it.
So
I can't take them.
Let's get on to the show, and let's go to a team that's been seeing green with a couple wins in the last couple of weeks. Steelers.
Let's go Steelers.
With a win over the Dolphins, I guess that's what it was. But
there was a point in the time of the game where we really weren't sure
if there was going to be a win. And with the Steelers falling behind 14-0 early on in the game, really depending on, a couple Minkah Fitzpatrick interceptions to get the team back in play, really take momentum back with those, nice defensive turnovers. And that's, I think, really what kept the Steelers in the game early on, and which, gave the offense some confidence. Mason Rudolph coming back from his concussion, he just didn't look ready to come back to game action. He looked frazzled. He looked rattled. He looked like he just needed some game action to get himself back into rhythm, which he clearly was not in, with an interception, another near interception along the sideline. It was a struggle for Rudolph in the first half, but he was able to pick it up in the second half. Put up a little bit better of a performance. Didn't really think that he would light it up, in the first half coming back from that injury that was, so severe. I don't think you could really put it into perspective how severe it was unless you're Mason Rudolph going through it. But I think, overall, Rudolph was okay. His overall numbers, 251 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, a pick, was sacked twice. He had a fumble, didn't lose it, Steelers recovered. It was okay. Not spectacular. Steelers did score 27 unanswered points, but it's the Dolphins. They're not good. They don't have much talent on their team.
Once Savion Howard went out of the game, I had a feeling we were going to win because he kind of blanketed.
And honestly, that touchdown pass at the end of the half for Deontay Johnson, almost a Hail Mary type pass.
I tell you what,
I'll
out blitz on a 3rd and 20. That's just genius.
A 3rd and 20. It doesn't make any sense. Why not drop why not drop 6-7 back in coverage, play to the sticks, and force a field goal?
It's because the controversy. The Dolphins just trying to blow games at this point in the season. Obviously that was not what any team would have done in that situation. But
they
Dolphins
the house.
Did.
And also, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I don't think Xavier Howard's knee injury is I don't think it was severe, but they still ended up putting him on IR.
He is their future, so you don't want to risk him for the future seasons.
Yeah. They're just hoping for, the next couple seasons, the future right now.
Mm-hmm. And the
going into the draft with 11 picks in the first 3 rounds, which is unreal.
Yeah, I agree. And the defensive side of the ball is very stout. As always. They give up 2 touchdowns late. But after that, they had nothing.
Yeah.
The Fitzpatrick to Fitzpatrick connection was solid. 2 picks for Minkah and Joe Hayden, Devin Bush, and all those guys had 5+ tackles. They were just giving Fitzpatrick just all kinds of trouble. He could not throw. All he could do was just scramble because no one was really getting open for him.
Right? This defense continues to get takeaways where in years past we've sort of been like, who's going to make the big play, get a turnover? But this year, 19 takeaways, 19 turnovers. They're 2nd in the league behind the Patriots. Some unreal numbers for them so far this season. They've continued to show that, they're improving as a defense. The secondary is playing a little bit better. Minkah Fitzpatrick addition obviously is proving to, being maybe a spark plug back there in the secondary, allowing them to play a little bit better. So that Steelers defense continues to be tough back there.
Ryan Fitzpatrick had 190 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks, was sacked 4 times. I look at the defense, and I think they continue to improve. Even without Stephon Tuitt, they're still getting constant pressure on the quarterback. We see it with the 4 sacks. I think
they only gave up 60 rushing yards as well for Miami.
Yeah, TJ Watt's been pretty good, as we've seen from him. I think Bud Dupree's been better. I think his ability to rush the passer has improved. I'm not sure what that means for his long-term future with this team, but I do know that right now, as long as he continues to, you know, be on this path, and that's a nice outlook for the Steelers. I like Bush and Vince Williams and Mark Barron. I think
the biggest thing is for this defense, they're feeding off of each other. The play of Cam Hayward and TJ Watt and Minkah Fitzpatrick in the secondary, they're feeding off these type of plays, and then the whole group as a whole is just playing, you know, to their best capabilities, and that we haven't seen in years past from this defense.
Ever since Minkah got here, it's been a more cohesive group. They've worked better together, it seems like. It seems what I have called Minkah the missing piece. I don't know. I still think a pass rusher would be an extra pass rusher would be nice to have. Maybe another defensive lineman, but I think Minkah, surely, you know, what he did to stabilize the defense, because Sean Davis was just, he was getting destroyed.
He wasn't doing it.
No, and any, you know, last season, the few games he played in this season before going on IR. So I think the impact Fitzpatrick has had, you know, it's been there. I'm not sure how great it's been, but I do know the defense has been more, there's more stability because of it. So
yeah, he's definitely a great talent, and giving up, you know, the pick that they gave up and where they end up in the season, you know, whether that's a top 10 pick or not, if it's a middle of the pack pick where it's like a 16th overall or whatnot, if they end up finishing like 8-8, 9-7, then I don't think it's that much of a big deal where you lose out on a pick that much later in the draft, because Minkah, like I said, great talent. You know, he's proven that he's going to be a player that's going to be staying here for a while. He's going to make the big time plays. And he, like you've mentioned, he wasn't the missing piece, but he's definitely brought this group maybe a little bit closer, helped that secondary a lot.
I think one thing that was really overlooked is the fact that he's just a second-year guy. You know, we saw Terrell Edmunds last year struggle. So, you know, you trade the first-round pick, which the Steelers never trade, for you know, a big-time defensive player out of a big school, high draft pick. You expect him to come in and, you know, light the world on fire. Sometimes that's just not the case. Now, I think with Minkah's case, it's been a little bit of both. I think, you know, some games he disappears, but some games he flat out makes every play possible that the Steelers need. And I think that, you know, that element is something that the Steelers need. I'm not sure if, you know, me saying he's disappearing is necessarily a bad thing. If he's back there and his presence is being felt in a different way, where other teams are forcing the ball down the field or not throwing it the ball down the field in general, then Minkah's making an impact in that regard because he's doing his job in the back end to solidify coverage.
I think you got to give a lot of props to that D-line, though. They're pressuring the quarterback, like we've mentioned before, and it's just allowing for that secondary to make plays, to make stops back there, to cover their guys and just make the simple plays that they need to make instead of getting burned every play where, you know, we weren't getting the pressure on the quarterback that much and allowing those guys to run their routes and get open. So I think, like I said, they're just feeding off of each other. And if this D continues to play like they are, when they hit the teams that they need to beat, like the Rams and the Colts and, you know, the Ravens later down the road, that defense, I think, is going to be ready for the challenge, just the way they've been playing.
Yeah, Hayward, Hargrave, and Cam Hayward, defensive line. Not too bad. But one takeaway that I definitely took out of this game, James Conner, Juju Smith-Schuster, thank you for showing up to a ball game. Juju, 5 catches, 103 yards, and a touchdown. Conner, 23 rushes, 145 yards, 6.3 is the average. Well, he had a long at 25, and he also scored a touchdown. Also had 3 catches on the day. I look at it and I say, yeah, I know it's the Dolphins, but it's still good to see production from your top players.
It builds the confidence up, too.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much confidence we really should be building at this point.
Especially against the Dolphins. Every team that plays them is just going to use that game as a walkover and just, you know, stack the points and the stats.
It's a try-to-stay-healthy game and get out of there with a win.
James Conner really didn't stay healthy.
Oh, yes. But as we've seen from James Conner.
But in terms of Juju, I feel like this is a game he needed because it was against a bad team. It was a chance for him to break out, you know, get some yards.
Nice
maybe,
touchdown
maybe, yeah,
too.
He had a quality. He took the ball right out of that dude's hands.
Lost him.
Like we've seen, he's always had the talent to be that guy. But I don't know. He hasn't really had a chance to build up like a rapport with like Mason Rudolph and all of them. I mean, this was the game that like he needed to like get him, just throw Juju the ball, hope for the best, and let's see what he does.
Yeah, but if you're gonna be a number one receiver for a team, you need to put those numbers up against just about any team. You can't have just your flashes against the Dolphins or the Cardinals where they're not good teams. You need to have those games against the Ravens.
Well,
and
I mean,
not fumble the ball.
I don't think he had 100 yards receiving until today.
Until the Dolphins, yeah. So, I mean, if you're going to be a number one receiver, which he needs to be, which he basically was last year with Antonio Brown, just all the controversy surrounding him. But this year, you know, AB isn't here. Juju's your new number one, and finally he cracks 100 yards. I mean, what, 7 games into the season?
He did not have a 100-yard game.
And that's an issue that you're 3-4. Yeah, you have, you know, different quarterbacks coming into play with Rudolph and Devlin Hodges. But I think he needs probably to catch the ball more and have more yards after the catch. And he just needs to be an overall better route runner and better, you know, number one, if he's going to be that number one.
And take care of the ball.
That's what Hold on to it.
Important. Now, one takeaway that I just found this week that is somewhat steel related. Did you guys hear the Le'Veon Bell news?
We actually went to go get him.
Came
or
out.
Attempted to.
The Steelers, according to Le'Veon said that surprisingly the Steelers had interest.
Well, I mean, like Le'Veon didn't like we didn't hate Le'Veon like we did AB. We just didn't want to pay him the money he wanted.
Yeah, they never came to terms in a contract. So
I mean, like
the deal he ended up signing with the Jets was basically very similar to the deal that the Steelers were offering him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
didn't he take less?
I think he might have even took less. Yeah, it's.
I mean, it makes also sense. With that holdout thing, like it just doesn't work, in my opinion. I mean, would you see what happened with Melvin Gordon? I mean, Melvin Gordon held out.
It
then
doesn't
he goes
work.
In.
And then the player's production is just not the same because they don't have all that training camp time. They don't have the workout time. They're just not in shape. They're not ready.
Exactly.
That's always been an argument with Ben Roethlisberger coming into the season where they only throw him in for like half a preseason game. Does he get enough work prior to the season?
Well, he was at least in camp. I look at the Melvin Gordon thing as like, look,
if you don't
Dallas
show up,
Keuchel, Craig Kimbrell in baseball. I mean, those guys struggled mightily this season. I know Keuchel turned it around a little bit in the second
but
half.
Kimbrell wasn't good at
Kimbrell
all.
Kimbrell was not good, and he's one of the best closers of all time. And he was terrible, and he had no spring training coming in the middle of the season in, like, May.
Like it doesn't – it just
June,
doesn't.
I think it was.
Nate, Nylander for hockey. Nylander had – he came in halfway through the season. He had 7 points. He had, like, 7-8 points.
Yeah, you miss a lot of work, especially with your team. When you're working individually, it's something else, but – you know, coming to try to fit back in with the team
and then you
mentality
just,
is tough to do.
And then you come in with people who are just already just acclimated and are just flying around. You just feel, I don't know, maybe.
And also, if there's
slow.
New play, like for Melvin Gordon's case, if there's new plays, you're not going to know them right
you
away.
Don't know the play
and the guy, more. Someone like Eckler, who's there already, is going to know the plays.
Eckler, in my opinion, is still he's still outplaying Melvin Gordon. Like, I don't know, like, what Melvin Gordon's stat line is as of late, but I tell you what, I'd probably take Eckler. He's a better pass catcher, and he can still run the ball.
Yeah. So, it's just, I don't know. Players definitely probably should not hold out as much as they are for money purposes. I think it's such a bizarre, you know, thing that you have to hold out for, you know, your perfect contract. Just get the money and start playing.
Like, you're telling me, like, you're upset with, like, what? How much would he get? Like, $54 million? Like, is that how much money?
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. But tell me, you're getting millions of dollars, and you're not okay with that? It's just
that's the decisions that they have. That's the poor decisions that they have to live with. So Le'Veon holding out led the way for James Conner to step in and be whatever you feel he is for this team. Yeah. As we will get the injury report, as we do every week, at the very top of it is James Conner with a shoulder injury. Did not practice Thursday afternoon. Tomlin has... He is optimistic that Connor could practice even in a limited time at practice this week and still be able to go on Sunday against Indianapolis. We'll take a look at Indianapolis after the injury report. And Jalen Samuels should be back with his knee injury. He was a full participant. Ramon Foster has a concussion. He's still not been cleared. He did not practice. on Thursday. Look for B.J. Finney to more than likely start at left guard. Dan McCullers has an ankle injury. He was full. Marquise Pouncey, a calf injury, was full. Ulysses Gilbert coming back from a back injury. He was inactive against the Dolphins. He's full. Benny Snell had knee surgery. Should be out about 2 to 5 weeks. Target maybe 3 weeks for Snell to come back at around the probably after the Rams game. He did not practice. Mark Barron and Vance McDonald had the Veterans Day off on Wednesday. They were back at practice on Thursday. That's the injury report. Now, why don't we take a look at the Indianapolis Colts report? Colts are 5-2 on the year.
No one thought that was coming with what happened before the season.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I mean, I didn't expect them to be 5-2, but like, this is still a very good roster with a good O-line.
They have the number one rated offensive line.
And it's
in the
NFL. Weird. Yeah. It's weird how their, you know, their schedule has unfolded through the first 7 games. I mean, they lost to the Chargers and the Raiders, two teams and then right now that they probably should have not have lost to, and then they beat a Titans team, a Falcons team that are just not been good. Playing good. But then you beat the Chiefs and the Texans. And then the Broncos last week. So, but the Chiefs and the Texans, those are two pretty darn good wins for them.
Chiefs on the road, then a bye to prepare for Houston at home, which they won.
And also,
it's been interesting in the AFC so far this year, just with how things have unraveled so far.
In that Colts-Chiefs game, they didn't just win. You can kind of say they dominated. They stopped Pat Mahomes.
The score doesn't show it.
The score doesn't show it. They absolutely dominated. Yeah, that is a textbook game on how you beat
the Chiefs. 13 points. So, yeah, they held that offense
and then
not much.
They gave them a healthy dose. They couldn't stop the run, so they just gave the ball to Marlon Mack. They realized their weakness, and they pounded it. I like Frank Reich as a coach. I think he's a great coach, and I love what he's doing.
It was
there.
A Sunday night football game where the Colts dictated the whole entire game. I didn't catch much of it until the second half and basically said, wow, what is going on here?
The Colts are on a 3-game win streak, and the last 3 games, they've really shut down the run of the opponents. I mean, some of the top running backs in the league that they faced in the Broncos, Phillip Lindsay, held him to 59 yards. Carlos Hyde and Duke Johnson against the Texans. Yeah, they're so-so. But only held them to they held them under 70 yards. And then Damian Williams for the Chiefs, 23 yards. They're keeping these running backs to below, you know, like 60 yards. And for the Steelers, their run game hasn't been so strong this year. And now you got to rely on Jalen Samuels, you know, where he's been not proven yet. I mean, maybe he will have a good game, but he's not proven. Connor finally got it going last game. Yeah, against the Dolphins. But maybe if he was playing, he'd have a good game. But he's not, and they're relying on Samuels. And we'll just see how he does. So
Indianapolis being considered the cardiac Colts, every game they've played has finished in a one-score game.
Yeah, all been close.
All been close games. All have been down to the wire.
And the Steelers have stayed close with a couple of the teams they lost to, so Seahawks and the Ravens.
It should be a very interesting game. I think, you know, Jacoby Brissett matches up with Mason Rudolph kind of similarly. I think Brissett clearly is the better quarterback at this point. But I think with the running games being, you know, what they are for each team, okay, fine. I don't know if the Colts' offensive weapons are really that good. You know, that's just
I mean, I think they have some decent offensive weapons. I mean, you got T.Y. Hilton still there, who's been productive over his years with the Indianapolis Colts. He has 360 yards this year, 5 touchdowns. You know, you got that double tight end look in Jack Doyle and Eric Ebron, where they have combined for 2 touchdowns
and
over 400-plus yards.
T.Y. still dangerous as ever. I mean, and then they have, I think, Eddie Pascal, too. I mean,
yeah, he's been up there. But the one guy who I think is going to be an X factor in this game, who I marked down, Paris Campbell, he's been a guy that's sort of flown under the radar so far. He's a rookie out of Ohio State. I thought maybe, you know, he'd have a little bit more production, but so far only 62 yards and a touchdown. I think he's a guy that, you know, they're going to look for. He's six foot tall. I mean, maybe a red zone threat. He ran a 4.3 in the combine. He's quick. You know, get him on a go route. Steelers are going to have, you know, they're going to be tested in the secondary, I think, this game. I think they're going to end up passing the ball quite often. And I think there's going to be a lot of they're going to diversify their offense between Mac and, you know, the passing game. And it's going to be a tough test for the Steelers, to be honest.
I also feel like this is a game that Mason Rudolph has to show, because he's not really, as you said, he's not really going to have the ground game to get going. So we're going to have to see if he can make the throws that he needs to make in order to win this game.
These next two games are going to be where Mason Rudolph shows that if, you know, he's going to be the guy to lead this team to the playoffs, the Colts game and the Rams got to be the ones to get it done. But Paris Campbell was limited with an abdominal injury throughout the season so far. He's only had 10 receptions for 62 yards. Could be a breakout guy that no one's really looking at. I look at Marlon Mack, who has almost 600 yards on the year. You know, we said that both running games for each team are okay, but Mack definitely has the upper hand, I think, due to his offensive line and the production that they've been able to put up this season. So I like what both teams bring to the table. I think it's going to be a close game. I think the Colts are going to, you know, control the clock at times with Marlon Mack and their offensive line.
And the Colts have shown that they're a good team, but they haven't taken the next step to distance themselves from any team they've played. So I don't know if that's the game against the Steelers or not, but I agree it's going to be a close game because they just haven't taken that step to become a top team right now.
They're an average team offensively, 23rd in passing yards, 18th in total yards, 11th in rushing yards. They're 16th in points with 22.6 a game, and they're tied for 9th in third down.
I mean, again, their defense is also, like, pretty good. I mean, they also have good pieces in Darius Leonard, Malik Hooker, all those guys. I mean,
they're a team on the rise. Mm-hmm. It's just they don't have the guy at quarterback that can, I mean, you know, pull one out of his hat.
Yeah, I mean, Jacoby Brissett will win you some games. I mean, but he's not,
and he has in brilliant fashion this year.
Mm-hmm. And he's just not like a transcendent, like an Andrew Luck. I mean, he is no Andrew Luck.
No, obviously not.
But, like, he will win you some football games.
So I gave the Steelers a good chance of winning this game. If the Steelers don't win this game, then the outlook is very bleak for the rest of the year, I think, even though there are a bunch of teams that are not very good on the schedule. I think this is a very important game. Now, quickly, as we wrap up the Steelers, did you guys see Zach Banner being reported as eligible in the game against the Dolphins and the reaction from the fans?
They cheered for a solid, what, 30 seconds to a minute? They didn't stop cheering whenever they said he was eligible.
Hey, if the running game is working with an extra eligible offensive lineman, why not do it?
Exactly.
Another thing quickly would have liked to mention, how about Andy Dalton being benched?
Hey, Andy, happy birthday. You're going to be riding pine for the rest of the year.
Andy Dalton is benched.
For Ryan Finley.
Poor guy. Comes another NC State quarterback, Ryan Finley.
Could be a preview of him. I'm sorry right here. He's the first quarterback ever to go 8-0 2015 and 0-8 this year.
That's impressive. It really is.
Not in a good way. But we got a lot on tap. We got college football as we approach the 11 o'clock hour. We got my irrelevant fact of the day, the I'm sorry segment. We can talk a little Pirates for a couple minutes. Travis Williams, Bob Nutting, they speak to the media.
Bob Nutting speaks,
first time in a long time. We'll talk a little Penguins, talk a little what if, end with some predictions and the shout-outs. But let's go to Nate's favorite segment of the day where he takes control. College football, Nate, take us away.
Well, got to start with the game that just happened last night. West Virginia Mountaineers took on the Baylor Bears, who were ranked 12th in the AP poll at 8-0. And that one was a much closer game than I think a lot of people expected. The Bears squeak out with a 17-14 win over the Mountaineers. An interesting game, to say the least. A lot of turnovers. I think West Virginia ended up recovering 3 fumbles. Austin Kendall threw a handful of interceptions. And just an odd an odd game for a top 12 team playing against a much, much inferior West Virginia team at 3-5. And the story again, just throughout the year, West Virginia just can't run the ball. They could not get it going for the Mountaineers. I just don't think they totaled 14 yards on 26 carries. 14.
That's like what, almost half a yard a carry?
Yeah. They just continue to struggle. Their only offensive production came off an 83-yard passing touchdown and a kick return. George Campbell on the passing reception and Winston Wright on the kick return for the Mountaineers. Defensively, the Mountaineers did hold the Bears to only 17 points on 8 sacks. So West Virginia was coming up big in that department, stopping the run, stopping really an explosive offensive passing team. But then, you know, Charlie Brewer continued to get it done, 20-26 for the Bears, 277 yards, 2 touchdowns, and they come out in Waco, Texas with a victory, 17-14 over the Mountaineers. And, however, late in the game, the Mountaineers were going to tie the game. Casey Legg, their kicker. Legg.
All right, WVU, I see you.
So they're right there, about to tie. Their kicker hits the 43-yard field goal.
Nice.
Penalty. However,
penalty.
The penalty flag flies in. Delay of game. 48-yard attempt. Blocked. Bears win,
17-14. Wow. So they would have won the game.
It's been that kind of year. They would have tied the game.
Yeah, it's been that time of year. And it's they're only 2 years apart from being a top 15 team. So it's just unreal.
With Will Grier and all them.
Yeah. So a team that was once very dominant in the Big 12 has fallen sort of into oblivion.
Can't even average a yard a carry.
Yeah, they're starting to fall in oblivion. And next team to talk about, I think, easily one of the best teams in the nation, the Penn State Nittany Lions, continue to impress.
They know.
Week in and week out with their team. And the guy that I love to watch for the Nittany Lions, Pat Freiermuth, their tight end. 3 touchdowns against the Spartans last weekend. He's been explosive. He's been dangerous. Sean Clifford continues to love hitting him. It's the same connection that McSorley had with Mike Gesicki. This Penn State team loves their tight ends. They surely do. Just how they love their linebackers up there at State College. And then the game versus the Spartans, you know, once again, this weekend of football filled with wet weather, rain. Yeah. We saw Pitt game. We saw Penn State game across the nation, rain just about in almost every game. The running backs for Penn State, though, they relied on all 4 of them, ended up all totaling a combined 103 yards. Not a super good day, but enough to get it done, enough mm-hmm. to carry them across the finish line in this game. For the Spartans, Brian Lewerke, he really never had a chance. He went 16 for 34 through an interception. No touchdowns for the Spartans. But this Penn State defense continues to stand stout. They can continue to be one of the toughest in the nation. Mika Parsons leading them, as always, 12 tackles on the day. But Penn State heads into a bye week. They do, after the bye week, they do take on.
Is this the OSU game?
No, they do take on 13 Minnesota right now, which
PJ Fleck doing a great job over there.
They're 8-0. That's going to be an interesting game. I think Penn State probably still has the upper hand, always.
No one's saying they won't give Penn State troubles. I mean, I probably believe they will in the beginning, but I mean, James Franklin's a good coach. He'll probably end up working his way around that.
Yeah, Penn State coming down the stretch, they play a handful of tough teams. Minnesota, Indiana, who you could say isn't a tough team, but I believe they're 6-2 now. Yeah, that's what I thought. They only had 2 losses. They're a team that has given some teams a tough time, and then they finish 2nd to last week against Ohio State. So Penn State has a couple tough tasks coming in the next 3 weeks for them. We'll see how they handle them. They've handled, you know, a couple teams that, you know, thought would be a little bit tougher quite easily, at least for the majority of the game, even if the games were close, like Michigan. So Penn State continues just to rock and roll.
Just run the table.
Yeah. Ohio State's going to be a big-time matchup for them.
That'll be the game to see who gets into the playoff.
Yep. And obviously the final one, locally, Pitt.
The most frustrating out of the three.
The Pitt Pigeon scored a touchdown, but the Pitt offense couldn't.
Yeah. It's been the story, it seems like, for the past 3 years.
All hail to the Pitt Pigeon.
Pitt offense, even when they've showed signs of improvement, continues to just stutter and not do much of anything. They continue to show their weaknesses, that they can't score at the goal line. It's just been an odd year for them. You know, it seemed like they could have easily went to 6-2 and been a team that was going to be clear-cut, maybe at this point in time, Coastal favorites, with Virginia losing.
Yeah, Virginia losing at Louisville.
So Coastal chaos continues. Pitt loses to Miami 16-12. Again, no offense. The defense, once again.
It was all Alec Kessman.
He ended up being specialist, ACC specialist of the week.
I said this. It reminded me of the Chiefs Steelers game a couple years ago. I think it was the divisional game?
Yes.
Because then we went and played New England. It was the divisional game. We scored 15 points, all on field goals. We just couldn't do anything with the ball. It was just crazy. And it just reminded me of this. We relied on the boot of Kessman.
Yeah, the Pitt offense just continues to, you know, be head scratching and just what play calls, why are you doing this and that? And I mean, throughout the year, Penn State, you had the goal line stand that they stopped Pitt. here in this game, no offensive touchdowns. Defense continues to play pretty well. I mean, Miami, not a potent offense, but they scored.
They did switch up QBs on us at halftime, I think.
Yeah, they made adjustments where Pitt, I just don't think they make a ton of adjustments. They just luckily squeak out wins where, you know, teams are coming back and they just get it done where they don't make adjustments. Because we've seen where Pitt has gone up against Duke and Syracuse in the first halves, and those teams made adjustments, came back, and, you know, scored. And same with UCF, scored a ton of unanswered points. Pitt luckily squeaking it out.
It's a secondary that's very talented with guys like Pinnock and, you know, DeMar Hamlin and Paris Ford, but they're also a defense that gets burned on the back end a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, they just do.
It's been
crucial times. Sometimes, you know, the defense just doesn't show up.
Yeah, it's been the story for the past couple of years. I just don't think their secondary has been that strong. But this year, I think it's better.
It is better.
Their experience back there. But their D-line has shown up. I mean, they still lead the FBS in total sacks, 38. I mean, no one thought coming into the year with just how things have unraveled with the injuries and so on that they were going to be at the top of the FBS at this point in the season. But it's a Miami team that lost to Pitt's next opponent, Georgia Tech, who right now Georgia Tech sits at 2-5, 1-3 in the ACC. That game, again, nothing's solidified in this ACC Coastal. Teams can win on any given day. Any team in the ACC can win on any given day. We've seen Louisville over in the Atlantic Division beat the Cavaliers. Virginia, who was at top of the Coastal. So anything, it can go either way on any given day. Virginia Tech comes into this game, though, 2-5. Pitt is easily the favorite by 7.5 points. So Pitt needs to take care of what they need to do. It's going to be like a Miami Dolphins game for the Steelers where they need to have a solid game. And if they get down early, then Georgia Tech is going to give them a run for their money.
I think Pitt needs to score a touchdown. That'll
on
definitely
the first, on the first drive.
No, at all. I think that'll definitely help their cause. So let's go to the irrelevant fact of the day. Yes, irrelevant fact
Everyone's
of the day.
Favorite time.
Now let's go to another sport that we really don't talk about. Let's go to basketball, and in particular the NBA. So the NBA season has been starting up. My Halloween costume yesterday was Steph Curry with the broken hand. I was very upset about
it. Not only was his hand broken, but his heart has been broken as well.
Poor Steph.
Poor Steph.
But did you know that back in the day, Hall of Famer, Shaq. You know Shaq, Shaquille O'Neal?
Yeah,
he's a Hall
of
Famer,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Shaq.
Well, you also know that there was something called Hack a Shaq.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wasn't really good at free throws. So, Shaq, how many free throws did he miss? Well, over the course of his career, Shaq.
I don't even want to know this.
Shaq, he was not good. He missed a total of 5,317 free throws during his NBA career.
And how many attempts did he have?
He's a big man. He's going to get a lot of attempts.
That's a great question. Golovatch's been on a lot of attempts, but that's that many free throws that he missed. That's like that number's so large. Some players don't even get that. Some good players don't get that in their whole career.
James Harden will get there though. He'll get there soon.
Yeah, congratulations. You beat the Wizards by one. You had to score 159 points to do it.
It's a high-scoring offense.
But, yeah, 5,317 missed free throws. That's why Hack a Shaq was created.
We love you, Shaq.
He was not good at making free throws.
Speaking of that, I just thought that was hilarious. Could you ever see that video when they play the Spurs? And then literally not even 3 seconds into the game, they go and foul Shaq. Popovich orders the Hack a Shaq, and they go and foul him 3 seconds into the game. And Shaq loved it. He thought it was hilarious. And just he just kind of, like, started to embrace it near the end of his career because, like, he was just that dominant that people would rather just foul him. It just blows my mind.
Shaq, you created a movement, and it's not really one that anybody would have wanted.
Didn't they do that for DeAndre Jordan, too?
Yeah, he created it, the movement. And
then DeAndre Jordan actually worked on his free throws, and now an 80-plus free throw shooter.
I don't know about that.
His stats, he was 80-plus.
And now every big man is starting to score more often.
And then we
shoot threes. Traditional centers don't work. Sorry, DeAndre Ayton. That is the irrelevant fact of the day. DeAndre Ayton also not playing for the Suns on other things that we won't get into. Now, I know DeAndre Ayton is saying, I'm sorry to the Suns organization for his actions. Who would you guys like to say I'm sorry to?
I would like to say, as being Jamal Adams and Le'Veon Bell, the Jets organization, I would like to say I'm sorry for just giving up on this whole team just 1 year into its tenure. 1 year, they decided on Le'Veon Bell for 1 year, and they're like, you know what, I don't like this guy. Let's get rid of him. I mean, let's get rid of him. We don't need him.
Adam Gase didn't want to sign him.
Yeah, well, that was after they signed him. And then Jamal Adams, I mean, he compared himself to Aaron Donald and Tom Brady, but still, he is the key part of your defense, him and Quinnen Williams. And you want to ship him when you told him beforehand that you were not even going to consider trading him?
You can get 2 first-round picks for him. I would have traded him.
But I think they said that it was 1st and 2 seconds.
It was like a first, and I think they were talking about a third. It was something stupid that the Cowboys should have just agreed with.
I mean, if you get that many picks, but you don't tell him he's untouchable if he's going to be touchable. If you're going to be able to trade him, you don't say he's untouchable. You tell him, hey, you're a key part of this organization. We want you here. But other than that, if we get an offer that we feel is right, we're going to make the move on you, and then he would understand. I don't know. The Jets are just a very bad organization.
Austin, I want you to go next. I want to finish off this.
Nate would not tell us what his I'm sorry is, so he has a, I guess.
Because it's funny. It's the best part, I think, of the show.
All right, well.
And it's non sports related.
We're going to find out. I think I already know what it is, but we'll get there soon. My I'm sorry goes to our friend Goldberg, Sam Goldberg, our friend. He is from New Jersey, but he's a big diehard Philly fan. So Tuesday. The Penguins hosted the Flyers. Okay. So we were like, hey, Goldberg, you want to go to the game? And he was like, oh, sure. So we go to the game. We're expecting, you know, a close, maybe 4-3 game or whatever.
It's 4-0.
It is 4-0 after the first period. We have absolutely dominated Goldberg. It's 6-0 in the third. In the third period where the Flyers finally score. So Goldberg gets up, starts cheering, and is absolutely going ballistic that his team finally scored a goal.
I love unlogical sports fans where that game, you know, they're getting rocked. And at the end of the game, I'm walking down the steps. I was in a different section. Walking down the steps, there's a group of Flyers fans, and my friend decides to go. Or they're chanting the Eagles song and the 76ers song. So we're like, what the heck? And so my friend decides to go, 7-1, 7-1. And the guy turns around and goes, when was the last time the Steelers won the Super Bowl? I'm just like,
2011?
First of all, okay, the Eagles just won last year. For the first time. Steelers have 6, and only 10 years ago. It's not like it's been decades.
I just want to say, shout out to Dr. Moretti, our advisor. When we were telling Goldberg, ha-ha, we beat you 7-1, he was saying in class, oh, well, how many Super Bowls have the Steelers won? The Eagles won 2 years ago. Well, the Steelers have the advantage 6-1. What's your point?
They finally won, and now they're back into oblivion again. They're 4-4?
Don't forget, the Phillies. Oh, he also said the Phillies, they won 2 World Series since the Pirates have last won a World Series. All right, congratulations. And he also said, they have a basketball team. Oh, congratulations. None of them can shoot, and you won't get past the second round. All right. Congratulations, Philadelphia. Your sports is doing great. You fired your manager. Your basketball team can't shoot.
You signed Bryce Harper, and he didn't do anything.
Your football team is .500, and you know what? Your hockey team is so bad, they lost 7-1 to the Penguins, who
it's not even like
didn't
they've
have
been,
their second best player.
Honestly, it's not even like they've been bad this year. They just played awful. Goaltending has been such an issue for
them. Goldberg, he had a thing or two to say about Brian Elliott. I don't think we can say it.
Goldberg did not like Brian Elliott. But, poor Goldberg. We were telling him, you know, we were winning in the goals department, but we told Goldberg, you know, you have more shots than us. Goldberg, we have more penalty minutes.
You have more hits than us.
You have more hits.
You're beating us in face-off. Yeah. You're doing great.
Goldberg, you're beating us in every aspect except the most important one, goals, okay?
Oh, they got rocked.
You know, and the fans around us, we were saying this, Penguin fans were just laughing so hard.
We were heckling Goldberg,
but you know what? Goldberg's a great dude. We had fun with Goldberg, and you know, it was $40, but it was $40 well spent.
And he was basically depressed the whole car.
So I'm sorry, Goldberg, but we had a great time, and I hope you did too. So now I'll move on to better times in the Pirates organization.
Whoa.
Oh, wait, Nate, I'm so used to being last.
No.
I'm sorry. I'm so used to being last. We talked about it for so long. I'm so used to being last in the I'm sorry department that I just usually transition. So my bad, Nate. Go ahead. Tell us your big thing right now.
I wanted to finish off with the biggest news in Pittsburgh this week.
Oh,
sorry. I'm sorry, Pittsburgh, for your crappy infrastructure. I'm sitting in the bus on 10th Avenue. I'm in a hole? What?
I'm in a sinkhole. I'm in a sinkhole.
Are you kidding me?
So many memes have come out of that story. It's unreal.
Nate, remember the video you showed me?
What about the Halloween video you showed us, Nate?
Yeah, someone decided to dress up as the bus and squat down and look like you're coming out of the sidewalk in the South Side.
That's incredible.
Literally, the most press a bus has gotten since Jerome Bettis was in town when he was playing with the Steelers. Just what an interesting story to wake up on a Monday morning.
It's one of the most Pittsburgh things.
And just how many memes came out of it, especially with the Steelers playing the Dolphins that night. You started off the game 14-0. You're losing. They showed the picture of them, the bus still in the hole. Then when they started scoring, they showed the bus getting on the crane. And then when they finally won, they showed it getting lifted out. It was the resurrection of the Steelers coming out of the hole to start the game.
I know we have had our own fun with the bus, making our own memes about the bus, but the bus definitely been something interesting to talk about. A great time around Halloween. Uses a Halloween costume. You know, no one got hurt, so it makes it fun to be able to use.
It makes it that much funnier.
The funniest thing is, PennDOT, what they say was going to take 6 to 8 weeks to get the bus out of the hole.
It's going to take 8 to 10 years.
It's going to take like 8 to 10 years to get that road fixed. PennDOT, you're still working on that road going over the West End Bridge. They ripped up the whole entire road over there. Like, where are they? There's no road. All there is, you look over at the side of the road, it's dirt. It's just dirt.
They're going back to the old-fashioned way of dirt
roads. Oh, my God. It's terrible. PennDOT, please pave the road, okay? And fix the sinkhole, which is going to take about 18 years.
It's not even a sinkhole. It's just a big, massive pothole. That's what Pittsburgh is.
It is a big, massive pothole. We'll be graduating, and that thing still won't be fixed. So there we are. So now let's go to a team. Now we'll transition into a team that is about hopefully getting fixed. The Pirates. Travis Williams is officially in. Bob Nutting officially speaks to the media. Seems like an eternity ago from the last time we heard him. Nutting admits that Gerrit Cole, Austin Meadows, Tyler Glasnow, that the team did not develop them good and that the team needs to develop the players that they have already in the organization to be able to, you know, use their talent, use what they have to their advantage, to be able to work off the players that they already have in system and have those guys get better so that you can use complementary pieces from outside the organization that you obtain to be able to complement the team, you know, fill the void, you know, add pieces. Like look at it, like Howie Kendrick. Look at the Nationals. They have their pieces. They have their Juan Soto. They have their, you know, Anthony Rendon. They have their Ryan Zimmerman. They have their Victor Robles. Complement them with pieces like Adam Eaton, Howie Kendrick, Matt Adams, we haven't seen him much. Gerardo Parra, we saw the impact that he had on the clubhouse. That is the type of thing. That is the world champions. That is the type of thing.
The people who are able to stay loose and also focus up when you need to.
You need a combination of, you know, internal guys that you have and then bring in some extra veterans, bring in some guys that complement your team.
It's just a well-rounded team.
Yeah, it's a well-rounded team. And, you know, it's good to see Nutting take responsibility. It's basically saying that Bob Nutting basically took the blame for everything. And that's a first. You know, Bob Nutting usually doesn't speak. But, you know, Bob Nutting is basically putting all his chips in the basket right now. And if the Pirates fail again, there's only one person we can blame for it, and it is Bob Nutting. And I like Travis Williams. I think that he's going to go out there, hire a good GM, hire a good manager. Matt Arnold is one of the guys that they're looking at from the Milwaukee Brewers. Dan Duquette, former Baltimore Orioles GM executive, now working at MLB Network Radio. He's gotten some looks. They're talking about him. We're talking about a couple other guys that have been in the Pirates organization in the past but moved on to different organizations. Kevin Graves, who the Pirates spelled his name last name wrong on the press release, is the current general manager. He made a waiver claim. Yesterday he also picked up Chris Archer and Starling Marte's team options. So we're starting to move along a little bit in the offseason for the Pirates. Still looking for a manager, still looking for a GM. It's going to take some time. GM meetings are only 2 weeks away, so you would think that hopefully Travis Williams and Nutting will find somebody before then. Will it happen? I doubt it. Depends on how, because they cannot get this one wrong. They cannot get this hire wrong.
They have to find someone that's going to be able to help this team grow in the next couple years.
They're going to take their time. And with the only managerial jobs being left are the Pirates, San Francisco, and the Mets, with Kansas City hiring Mike Matheny, former Cardinal manager. He don't have to go far away for his next job. I think the Pirates would very much benefit from having Joe Espada as manager. I think he's going to be a possible option, but it's all up to the GM, and they need to get a GM. That is the thing, but that is Pirates talk. All right, after we quickly talk about the Pirates, let's go to the Penguins. We had our little preview of the Penguins, the Goldberg game, 7-1 over the Flyers.
Wait, before we actually want to transition to the Penguins, do we want to talk about the World Series at all, or are we waiting for that to the end?
Let's jump into it right now.
Because why not? We're sticking with baseball. Let's just go with the World Series. Just talk about it's a Game 7. I mean, you got to talk about it.
It was a phenomenal game.
Also, I don't know if you noticed, it was the least watched Game 7 ever.
Was it?
Yes.
That's surprising.
That's kind of surprising.
One,
I agree.
One, D.C., the DMV is a big area, a big viewing area, I would feel like, with Virginia, Maryland, and the D.C. area. You would think get a lot of viewership with the Nationals, especially their first time. And obviously, just around baseball, the underdog story you mentioned, Goldvash, when we were talking about that. The underdog story and Houston Astros, just Texas, obviously, and Houston is a big viewing area. You would expect to get a lot of viewership, but I guess, I don't know. Maybe people in New York decided to tune out because, you know, they're not in it once again. So, who knows? That's interesting, but what a game it was. And again, this World Series has been, or these playoffs, just been one of the teams that you can't count out teams. You know, no matter the score. I mean, we saw the Nationals were up 2-0. Then the Astros come back 3-2. And then the Nationals go on the road into Minute Maid and win the final two games. So that's just unbelievable.
First,
was the story of the Road Warriors this postseason, yep. this World Series.
First time ever in the MLB, the NHL, or in the MLB, in the NBA. It doesn't matter. First time ever out of all seven-game series, the home team lost every game. The road team won every game. That's incredible. The road team won every game. There was no home field advantage whatsoever. It was the complete opposite. That's mind-blowing.
I don't know if that's nerves or what it is. Like, it's so,
I don't know.
It's so,
well, I mean, also
interesting and intriguing to think about that not one team can win at home.
I mean, but also the Nats, they were 5-1 on the road before going in to that World Series game, and they ended up 9-1.
Yeah, the Nats were playing.
I mean, if you go 9-1,
surprising baseball.
If you go 9-1 on the road in the playoffs, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you do that. I mean, do you just feel more comfortable
you're
playing?
You're gonna win the world. You're gonna end up winning the World Series if you can go into the postseason and go 9-1 and on the road, especially if you're incredible. especially if your team that is a lower-seeded team where you're going into Houston where they have the home field advantage.
It's almost as like it just didn't faze them. The crowds, anything. I mean, Rendon has a plan, like, because Rendon, I mean, mean mug, cold heart.
Yeah,
absolutely ice cold.
Speaking of someone who was not fazed, once again, Howie Kendrick. What a postseason for him.
Two-run homer,
two-run homer in Game 7 for the Nationals. Unreal. Greinke ended up having a pretty decent start for the Astros.
He only gave up that home run to Rendon.
He only gave up two hits
overall.
Two hits overall.
And then Will Harris comes in and lets up, you know,
but
the game breaker.
In Will Harris, he threw him a pretty good pitch. It was on the far left corner. Cali Kendrick just reached out and got it.
Yeah.
You know, twice in the postseason that he's come up extremely clutch for the Nationals.
We'll get into the Astros' decisions out of the bullpen a little bit later in the what if segment. But yeah, I just think Rendon was the catalyst. I think the MVP probably of the World Series should have been Anthony Rendon instead of Steven Strasburg, but I think him and Soto were just the dominant forces, along with Kendrick being a great piece along with them. And the Nationals did it. They pulled it off. No one thought middle of the year they'd really be able to do this. No one thought halfway through the postseason that they'd be able to do this, but they continued to prove the doubters wrong, and they had the talent to
and
do
then,
it.
In a very special postseason run.
And yeah. They did it.
And touching on Strasburg, I mean, at first, I mean, when we were watching the end of the game, we didn't think really any pitcher was going to end up with the MVP. We thought it would have been Rendon or Kendrick or maybe Soto.
But then you realize how dominant.
He went 5-0 1.98 ERA. He held opponents to a 2.221 batting average. He really, you know, dominated on the mound.
Down some of the best hitters.
Yeah, I mean, the Astros, we talked about, their lineup is solid up and down the roster. Their lineup, right. They got hitters. And he really, you know, kept them to a limit where they couldn't get on the board or couldn't, you know, produce the runs they wanted to, get the production they needed to get to win games. And just all postseason, I mean, Strasburg was lights out for the most part. Whether that was a bullpen appearances, starting, just unreal. I mean, he was the first overall pick in 2009 out of the school.
They benched him in 2012.
Out of the school, San Diego State, want to touch on that. Maybe. With comparisons of Kawhi Leonard, who came out of San Diego State as well. Came out just around the same.
Just a couple of fun guys.
Winning
championships.
Kawhi came out, I believe, in 2012, and Strasburg in 2009.
How about that?
Excuse me.
Same school.
And they end up being MVPs of their championship runs.
Of their respective teams.
So how about that?
It's pretty incredible.
San Diego State, out of any school.
What's wrong with San Diego State?
I don't know. I mean, you don't hear about them too much.
They just produce a bunch of fun guys.
Didn't Daniel Tomlinson go to San Diego State?
Who?
Someone running good running back on San Diego State.
I don't know.
Oh, Rashad Penny, I think.
Yeah, Rashad Penny did come out of San Diego State.
No idea what I was talking about, but okay. So let's go to the Penguins. We ready to move on to the Penguins?
All right.
All right, let's do it.
Goldberg.
As we mentioned, the Goldberg game, 7-1 over the Flyers. Malkin should be back tomorrow, right?
Yes, I believe so. That'll be a bonus, but I mean,
who gets cut?
They sent Sam Lafferty back down.
Who gets cut from? Who goes to inactive? Who's inactive?
Either that, or they send someone back down to Scranton, into Wilkes-Barre.
They just sent Sam Lafferty back down. So
yeah, Sam Lafferty's back down. If in my opinion, I take Dominik Simonov, but he's also been playing pretty well recently.
I mean, he had a reasonably good game.
He was about to be my I'm sorry, because I've always given him crap, but he had a goal and two assists.
It figures that the game we go to, Dominik Simonov has a really good game.
He looked.
Now, I mean, I don't know who you said. I mean.
Do you throw Bluger?
I don't know. Bluger's been one of the best faceoff men in the league right now.
I mean,
I like Bluger as a fourth line center.
You're gonna stick McCann back into his winger role, because he's sitting at the third line center right now, and you move Malkin up to that second line.
And also we got Galchenyuk finally.
A healthy lineup right now for the Penguins, and they were sort of inconsistent when Malkin was out. You know what? Won 5 games in a row, then they lost 3. Now they're back winning 2 games in a row. So this team maybe can get on a roll again.
Also, speaking of someone who's been on a roll, Patrick Hornqvist. He's been kind of like tearing it up. I mean, I know he's not like going crazy, but I think he has a couple. I think he has a good bit of points.
He flies under the radar.
I mean, like from only having like 20 goals last year, I think he's off to like a pretty good start. Don't quote me on it, but I think he's had a solid start to the season.
Yeah, the Penguins have had production from all up and down the lineup. But again, with injuries, you're going to need that with different guys, Cahoon and Rust, Brandon Tanev. I mean, Hornqvist does have 10 points on the year, like Gulvesh mentioned, 5 goals, 5 assists. He flies under the radar. He's a guy that's going to sit in front of the net, and he's going to, you know, a lot of redirections and put in pucks when, you know, you sort of need him to. And he's the guy that's going to produce for you low key. I mean, he's just a guy in the postseason. We saw he had the huge goal against the Predators two or 3 years ago that won them the Stanley Cup in Nashville. Again, just guys in the lineup that are going to make big-time plays.
I don't know how to feel about this team, because this team has the pieces to go deep.
Another guy that I mentioned before, Brandon Tanev. He scored against the Stars in their 3-0 victory. Murray had a 25-save shutout.
He scored against the Pens?
He's a gritty guy.
He's a gritty guy. He reminds me of Pascal Dupuis. He just does. He'll be physical when he needs to be. He has very quick strides. His skating abilities remind me of Pascal Dupuis. Just how he is, how he's gritty. He can, you know, score your timely goals every once in a while. Had the overtime winner versus the Avalanche, even though that was sort of a gimme goal.
That was Landeskog.
Yeah, so he's a guy that I think is going to fit in well on that third line. He's going to be your big physical presence where there really isn't much of any on the offense besides maybe Bukestad throwing around the body or your fourth liners. and Rust and Bluger and those type of guys. So Tanev can throw around the body, and he's going to be effective. And the one thing about we were waiting for in the Flyers game, no fights, no really big physicality.
I mean, the game was over so quick.
I was honestly expecting the Flyers to be a little bit more chippy.
That's one thing that like really stood out to me. Like it did not seem like a chippy game. It didn't really seem like
it was that physical. It just seems like the rivalry between the Flyers and the Pens has fizzled. Like it just doesn't have the spark it used to.
No.
Even when they just played each other in the playoffs 2 years ago, and even then it didn't seem like it, just because it was just expected that the Penguins were going to go and walk all over them, and they sort of did.
Don't have the grit guys, you know. They just aren't there
hockey's
anymore.
Just a different sport now. I mean, there's no physicality like it used to be. I mean, if you had Ryan Reeves, maybe it would be a little bit different, and that's what it was. When Reeves was here, all he would try to do was hit and fight.
Well, I don't know if it's hockey in general. I just think that the rivalry has died down a little bit, and I think that's okay. Would I like to see it picked up a little bit more? Of course. But I'm also okay with guys not taking shots at Sidney Crosby and my other best players.
I mean, the rivalry is still there between the Caps and the Pens. I mean, that one has definitely grown with their playoff, you know, matchups. And
yep. Of course, the two greatest players of these eras.
Crosby, and then you throw in Wilson, who's just flying around the ice, hitting whoever he wants to hit. So maybe that'll be Tanev whenever the Pens play the Caps.
When you had Wayne Simmons and all those guys that were just – you know, just pure gritty. I mean, I thought...
The Flyers are still kind of gritty. I mean, I felt
like whenever Simmons, like, lit up Dumoulin in the stadium series, I thought that would have kind of sparked it a little
more. Yeah, I don't know. There's still guys that I think, you know, can ignite this rivalry on the Flyers side. I think Nolan Patrick's a gritty guy. I think Travis Konecny is a gritty guy.
Travis Konecny is a Marchand, but he has not nearly as much skill.
Yeah.
You got to also remember it's an early season game in October.
Yeah.
Penguins are at home and we're up very early. Okay. Yeah. It was not close near the end of the game.
Still, that's where the chippiness starts to come into play.
Because people get upset.
They get upset. I mean, I don't know if you saw, but on Twitter I saw Travis Konecny, because being at the game we didn't see it, but he was on the bench. Yeah, he was on the bench fired up. So, but the Pens move on tomorrow at 1 p.m. They play the Red Hot Oilers, who are 9-4-1 and are at the top of the Western Conference. How about that? It's not a surprise, but not really what was expected.
Connor David.
You give McDavid, Draisaitl, just about anybody, this is what they should have been.
Draisaitl leads the league in points at 25. Not surprising for him, because he was 100-plus points last year. So him and McDavid feeding off each other. But how about
the real deal, James Neal?
11 goals on the season.
On his, like, 11th team as well.
I think it's his fourth, but, I mean.
This team's getting offensive production that they should be.
It's only because. The deal, like, they traded away Milan Lucic. They got away a terrible contract for a supposed terrible contract. But James Neal's put up 11 goals already. He didn't do that all last year.
That's a rough one for the Flames.
He didn't do – Nate, he had, like, what, 5 goals last year?
Yeah, he had a very bad season.
He just didn't fit how the Flames played, in my opinion. They were, like, more quick, run and gun. I mean, Gaudreau, Monahan, Tkachuk, all those guys. Not really built for how – you know, James Neal.
I mean, James Neal is very similar to a guy you mentioned before, Brad Marchand, where, yeah, he can put up the offensive numbers, but he's relatively gritty, and he'll get into the dirty areas and try to be chippy. I mean, when he was with the Predators, I mean, the one thing about James Neal, just watching him play in Pittsburgh and watching him play in Nashville and now with the Oilers and the Flames, he's been a guy to take careless penalties. He just takes
offensive,
careless
offensive zone.
Penalties.
He's not a good locker room guy either.
Yeah.
Offensive, Nate, all the offensive zone penalties. He'd be in the offensive zone, he'd just hook somebody.
Yeah, I mean, Brad Marchand. Brad Marchand does a lot of dumb things, but you know, he's...
Brad Marchand puts up 100 points a year.
Good players that, you know, can score goals are going to get around on teams. James Neal, not 8 teams he's played for. This is now his 6th. Dallas, Pittsburgh, Nashville, Vegas for a year, Calgary for a year, now Edmonton.
So. I mean, but again, he's also produced in almost every year except Calgary.
Yeah, but people don't like him inside the locker.
So
inside
that'll
the
be,
locker room to keep
that'll
him
definitely
around.
Be a fun matchup between him and the Penguins.
All right, now let's go to what ifs. What if, this is the first one and probably the best one, what if Gerrit Cole would have pitched in the World Series? What if he would have came in instead of Will Harris?
You were talking about, we saw him warming up, and you go, oh, they have Will Harris in right now. And I'm like, I don't know.
Well, I think they would
have. Then the next pitch, Will Harris. Home run, Howie Kendrick.
Goodbye, Howie Kendrick.
Then we were like, what if? If he's in there, that does not happen. I'm telling you right now, I don't think that happens.
Well,
I think Gerrit Cole goes in there, throws a heat. maybe at that point in time, the Nationals don't score, but I don't think Kendrick hits home.
Here's my view of it. A.J. Hinch said that he was not going to put Cole in until late in the game. He wanted to put Cole in the ninth inning to close out the game. He wanted Roberto Osuna to pitch the inning before. Then he wanted to put Cole in. My opinion is he also did not want to put him in the middle of an inning.
That's what I heard.
Does it concern me all that much? It's World Series Game 7. Put your best guy out there.
I mean, Will Harris was pretty reliable throughout the
postseason. That's what Joe Buck said.
I don't care. Put Gerrit Cole in. Make it the Madison Bumgarner run with the Giants against Kansas City. I just feel that you put Gerrit Cole in that situation, you let him pitch the rest of the seventh, you have him pitch the eighth, and you have him pitch the ninth. Finish out the World Series. Let your best pitcher go out there and pitch. You're not going to re-sign him, so run the wheels off of him. Just put him out there. Let him pitch. Draw up the pitch count. Let him do everything he can to go out there and get all the outs that you can to secure a World Series. So, bad move by the Astros.
Another thing that made the Nationals just feel destined. I mean, you don't pitch Gerrit Cole, who's arguably been the best pitcher, maybe even in all the MLB during this year.
Yeah.
And you don't pitch him. It's just, I don't know, just another thing that, like, it was just the Nationals championship to win. They never even put him in.
All right, let's go back to where it all began, the wild card game. What if Christian Yelich was in right field for the Brewers in the National League wild card game? Would the ball went underneath his glove like it went under Trent Grisham's? And if so, where would the Nationals have been?
No. I mean, Yelich, he makes that play, but it's at least a tie game. And they don't take the lead, in my opinion. Because Yelich, the great fielder that he is, he'd pick that ball up. He'd at least get it in. I mean, they maybe score a run or two, and then they just keep rolling.
That just shows you how it was destined. I don't know if the Nationals, in my opinion, I don't know if the Nationals would have won. But I think it kind of shows destiny kind of brought it that way.
The second they beat the Dodgers, I had a feeling. Like, you beat the best team in baseball. I mean, next to the
Astros.
Did
they get there? I didn't know if they'd win. All right, last one. What if Goldberg didn't go to the Penguin game?
The game wouldn't have been nearly as fun. Simple as that.
He would not have gone to trash talk. No. I think the game still would have resulted the same. You guys were having fun with him.
We were having fun with Goldberg.
We were having fun with Goldberg.
All right, let's get to predictions. Steelers, Colts, Sunday afternoon. Who wins and why?
Oh, I think this is going to be a clinic from the Colts. I just feel it. I mean, the Colts, they're a great football team, and they're going to show us why. I mean, they're going to give us a healthy dose of Marlon Mack. And when Jacoby Brissett needs to, he's going to make the throws. And I think they're going to win by a score of 31-10.
I have my final. Kind of similar. I do have the Colts, though, putting up 35 points to the Steelers 20. I think a defensive touchdown for the Colts, leads the way, and they sort of don't look back. I think Jacoby Brissett and his offense, they run the ball well. I think he throws the ball well. I think he hits his receivers and T.Y. Hilton. And I think, like I said, Paris Campbell will be your X factor in this game. So I think Colts sort of run this one up.
24-17, Steelers win. I think Mike Hilton has a pick six.
Bold.
I think the defense comes up and, makes big plays. I think the Steelers defense is going to be the key factor here. I also think the running game with my guy, Jalen Samuels, coming back. I think the Steelers are going to dictate the game. Renegade is going to be going. Steelers get a big win at home against the Indianapolis Colts and get back in the win column. All right, let's move on. Pitt, Georgia Tech, who wins?
Pitt should win. I mean, this team lost to Miami, correct? Or they beat Miami? I don't know.
Well, you were at the game.
No, Georgia Tech beat Miami.
Georgia Tech beat Miami, but
Georgia Tech is still at the bottom.
Georgia Tech's still at the bottom. I feel as if Pitt should win. But I think Pitt's just going to come out on top. I mean, if you're 2-5, you're not 2-6, 2-5, whatever they are, they're not the best. I feel like Pitt's going to win by a score of – it's not going to be very – I'm going to say it's going to be 17-10.
I don't think Georgia Tech scores a touchdown. I think it's going to be the way Pitt played on – Saturday, I think the final's 21-9. I think Pitt's defense continues to improve and be dominant against this Georgia Tech team. I don't think they really let any other running game, develop, and I think Pitt comes out on top.
I think Pitt wins by a field goal, 17-14.
Goldberg.
17-14, I think Pitt wins by a field goal. Now let's go to the Penguins. Will they defeat the Oilers? Penguins work through the lines from practice. Have just come out. They are Crosby, Gensel, Simone, top line. Malkin, Galchenyuk, and Hornquist with Malkin back at practice. Nick Bjugstad is anchoring the third line. He is running with McCann and Cahoon playing on the left wing. They're rotating out, and Brian Rust on the right wing. Teddy Bluger, Aston Reese, and Brandon Tanev on the fourth line. Dubon, Letang, Pedersen, Schultz, Johnson, and Marino, with Rikola and Ruedel being your fourth pairing on the defensive side. Any thoughts on that?
I like that lineup, but I also think whenever Sid plays McDavid or anybody like a McKinnon or anyone like that, he steps up. He shows them who's the better player.
So who do you think wins?
When he's in the spotlight, Crosby's tough to stop. But my prediction, it goes to overtime. Oilers win it 3-2. McDavid has two goals. I think Crosby has a goal. But I think just with Malkin trying to get back into the mold of things, I don't think it goes over too well. I think, you know, he struggles a little bit on that second line for the first game back, and I think the Oilers come out on top 3-2.
But, I mean, just like you said, you put Sid in the spotlight, he's got to perform. I think Sid's going to somehow, I mean, you rarely see it. I feel like Sid's going to carry this team to a victory, like, over the Oilers. I can't see them not winning whenever. Because, I mean, the last time he played McDavid, I mean, he had that spectacular goal where he made someone look stupid, and then he put it in the back. Then there's just no way. I do not see the Pens not winning this game. They win by a score of 4-2 with an empty netter from Nick Bjugstad.
I think Pens win 5-2. Crosby scores 2. Just a good game in general for the Penguins. I think they play a nice all-around game.
It's a fun one to watch. I'm probably going to tune in.
And they defeat Connor McDavid like the Penguins always do. All right, let's go to the shout-outs as we wrap up the show. Closing out, we ran pretty late today.
I mean, we started late.
We also started late. Purple Rain was
going pretty
late.
Curse you, Purple Rain.
Continues to...
Purple Rain continues to...
Continues to rain on our parade.
Yep. It continues to give us troubles, just like it was pouring on us yesterday.
Oh, so bad.
All right, shout-outs. Typical shout-out. Mom and Dad and the family back home when they listen to the podcast, most likely. But also want to shout-out to the Baldwin side of this show. Baldwin football team heads into McKee Sports Night.
Woo!
Let's see how they will fare in that game.
I would like to shout out, as always, simple, my mom, my dad. Alex, I keep forgiving you to give the link to you and your friends at the show so you can tune in. I would also like to give it to Mr. Gertchak for... You know, I believe he's tuned in.
I would also like to shout out Mr. Gertchak. Gertchak's listening. I think Borquin's listening. Good luck tonight in your football game tonight, Borquin. Teddy, I know you're listening. I think you are. I know Nick Tarrant's listening, too. I'll see you later, Nick.
Shields isn't listening, but I'd like to shout out Shields,
No,
too.
Shields is not listening. He's currently in class now. Trying to listen, but not being able to. Also want to shout out Baldwin Volleyball. Not the season we wanted it to end. We did not want it to end like this, but... Jess Noss couldn't stop Tank. Great group of people. Great group of coaches. Wish them all the best, and we'll see what the future holds. And also want to shout out the family, as always. Great as can be. Always supportive. Always, it was always good to see them. Good to see them yesterday for Halloween. So, that's the show. Any of you guys want to add anything else at the end of the show?
Also, I looked it up. DeAndre Jordan shot 77% from the free throw line last year.
Way to end the show.
Way to end the show, Goldbash. All right, that is our show. And this is a song that we continue to play because we need to find a new song.
So, I'm telling you. Also, shout out Henny Ellie for his song hitting Apple Music and Spotify.
Now,
go take a listen.
We're not playing that song. But all right, for Baldwin and the Berg, this is show number 9. Going pretty fast on the year. In the November, I'm Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Goldbash.
Thank you, as always. Turned to the city, I broke all the knots. Got some more millions that keep me a knot. I created history, it made me a lot.